Today, I'm having a conversation with Chrissy Chella, the founder of Honor Active. Chrissy started as a fitness creator, but what she has built is a serious global business. Profitable, bootstrapped, growing fast with more than 100 employees, stores in New York and LA, and a clear ambition to become the first female-founded billion-dollar women's active brand. What I find so interesting about Chrissy is that she is at a real turning point. The influence is there, the community is there, the product is there. But the question is how you take a brand built so personally and scale it into something global, operationally strong, and bigger than any one person. We talk about the difference between ambition in the UK and in America, what it takes to turn influence into real commercial power, and why she's no longer interested in proving herself to people who will never understand what it took for her to get there. We also talk about business partners, people pleasing, leadership criticism, bringing in a CEO, building a C-suite, and learning where she can be most brilliant inside the business. What I kept thinking throughout this conversation is that Chrissy is not at the beginning of her story. She is at the moment where the business, the stakes, and the vision are all getting much bigger, and how she's choosing to rise with them. Here is Chrissy Chella. If you've ever worked in sales or run a team that does, this stat will hit a nerve. Sales teams spend about 50% of their time on admin work, entering data, chasing updates, logging activity, instead of selling, building relationships and closing deals. If the tool you're using is creating more work than it removes, something has gone fundamentally wrong. That is where today's sponsor, Pipedrive, comes in, a simple, intelligent CRM tool loved by growing sales teams. Pipedrive was built from the ground up to strip away manual work, smart automations that handle the repetitive stuff like follow-up reminders, deal updates, and activity logging. You can customize the automations to fit your own sales process, and the AI features analyze your pipeline, flag stalled deals, and surface what needs your attention so your team isn't going looking for it. Switch to a CRM built by salespeople for salespeople and join the over 100,000 companies already using Pipedrive. My link gets you an exclusive 30 days free instead of the usual 14-day trial. No credit card or payment needed. Just head to pipedrive.com/aspire to get started. That's pipedrive.com/aspire and you can be up and running in just minutes. August is the transition month. Summer's still here, but you can feel the routine starting to pick back up. The meetings and the calls get denser, the days have real structure again, and what you're wearing has to actually work in that world. Macy's has a strong edit for that shift. The idea is to start with the staples you already reach for the most, like a great pair of jeans and a well-cut tee, and let the small choices do the personality work. A leather jacket or a lightweight knit, that's what carries you through the temperature strings between morning and evening. And a single accessory can change the whole feel of an outfit, whether it's a good bag, a bold shoe, or a statement earring. If getting dressed is the last thing you want to think about when the routine gets busier, Macy's personal stylists are free to book. They can build the whole look with you, so it's not something you have to figure out every morning. Head over to Macy's in store or online. Chrissy, welcome to Aspire.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so happy to have you. Mm-hmm. When did I meet you for the first time? Do you remember?
You invited me to your London founder entrepreneurial dinner.
Oh, yes, you were a seat at the table. Do you know how long ago that was? I remember like when it was, but like, I'm like, was it over, is it 2 years ago?
Nearly
was it
2 years.
It was probably 2 years ago. So I've known you for 2 years mm-hmm. and it has been a crazy busy 2 years for you, because when I think about you, it's like I almost didn't know where to start this podcast. I was like, wait a minute, there's so much to talk about. There's so much happening. Your business has been on an absolute tear. And for anyone who doesn't know you, you're the founder of Honor Active, which is, you did over $200 million in revenue, which is absolutely crazy. But you have said that if it wasn't for fitness, that you wouldn't be alive today. Mm-hmm. And it all started because a young teenage girl in the UK felt completely lost and walked into a gym. And I think it's just kind of amazing. Your story is incredible. But I really wonder what fitness has actually taught you about what's possible for yourself, and specifically what's possible for you as an entrepreneur.
At the time when I stepped foot into the gym, I think I was around 17 years old, and I was going through a lot of problems, personal problems. I love my family so much, but unfortunately, you don't get to pick them. You're handed them. And through thick and thin, they have taught me life lessons that I don't think any 17-year-old should have experienced at the time. And so I didn't have an escape, especially being from a Balkan household. You as a woman don't really have a voice. You know, you're either told to get married, to cook, to clean, and your ambitions are a bit too high, too big. So when I set foot into the gym, I realized that I had control for the first time ever, and I had control over my body and my mind. Had I not gone to the gym, I don't think I would have created my two businesses, and I don't think I would have been sat here today. No way.
I mean, it's a crazy thing to think about. It's the big standout of you, because when I met you, you introduced yourself to me in such a way that I will never forget. You came to the UK from Albania when you were about 4 years old. And when I met you, you came with a gift.
Yes.
And you said to me, I bought you this gift because in my culture, you don't turn up to somebody's house or to somebody's moment, their event, their dinner, without coming with a gift and giving them something. You were so sweet and you were so humble and you were so amazing. And I looked at somebody who was next to me, I was like, write her name down. Like, make sure, you know, we remember who she is. And in my head, because you were so humble and sweet, I asked you a couple of questions about your business and you kind of played it down. I assumed that you were one of the younger, smaller founders that was sat around the table. One of the girls that had come to learn, not one of the girls that had built a $200 million business. And I think that kind of says everything about who you are and how you hold yourself. And I wonder if where you come from, that immigrant hustle, that feeling that you've always kind of had to prove yourself, does that actually ever leave you? Because the way that you turn up in a room, like, just, you feel that intrinsically about you.
It hasn't been, which is so mad to say, but it hasn't been until this very moment, probably like a month ago, where I was like, I'm not proving myself anymore. And to think that before that moment, I had a business that made close to $200 million last year with a positive EBITDA, with a store signing in New York City, Bond Street, which we all know how difficult and how expensive that is, with another store in LA with 130 employees. That's just one of the businesses. And it took me till now to be like, wait, why am I trying to prove myself to people who would never even understand what I've had to go through and grind to get here? I read a comment the other day. And one of the comments was like, you wouldn't be where you are today without your co-founders.
Oof.
And I was like, interesting, interesting, because you only know about my co-founders because of me. And I love my co-founders. I think having a business partner in life and in business who believe in you so much is such a powerful tool. But honor is bigger than any business they've ever built. That didn't happen by accident. And you only know I have co-founders because you know me. And you know honor, and you only know honor because of me. So that's the moment where I was like, you no longer have to prove yourself. You've done more than enough. And now you have to like stand 10 toes down. And everything you say you're going to do it without an explanation. Because I had to explain every fucking thing that I was doing constantly. Not only because I'm an immigrant, not only because I'm a woman, not only because I'm early 30s, but also I post bikini pictures. So it's like, no, I have a bit of a brain in here, you know?
But it's interesting to me because I think as a woman, and I really have just gotten so used to it at this point that it genuinely doesn't even touch me. Whatever you do and whenever you're successful, people are looking for every other reason but you, behind you, beside you, in your past, in whatever way they can find for it not to be attributed to
you. Yeah, why?
They will try to find it.
But why?
Well, what do you think?
Is it jealousy? Is it like you're annoyed that you didn't get to where I got to? Does that sound arrogant? Does that sound ignorant? Like, can you even say that out loud nowadays? But what else is it if it's not jealousy? Because I don't feel like that about you. I don't feel like that about other women. I'm like, what can I do to work with you? What can I do to connect with you? What do I have that you need and you have that I need? That's the way I see it.
I really think that we inherit so much of the language and the things that we think. It's almost passed to us by other women. Like, what did she do? She couldn't have got there on her own. Like, surely something went wrong there. I must find out about it. And actually, one of the main reasons that I do this podcast is to shine a light, not only on the founder and their story, but what they did to get there. Because if the narrative is going to change, like, we have to change it. Mm. One conversation at a time. Not only do people begin to go, oh, like, I understand how she did it. They start to understand that they can do it too. And so there's so much to learn from your journey, the way that you've done things, where you started. And, you know, to think that you started, you know, doing these workout PDFs on a student laptop, which to me is mind blowing. At one point, I think you were making between 50 and 70,000 pounds a month, which is mind-blowing to think that you were making millions and millions of dollars or pounds, because the money's the money, whatever it was millions when you were a teenager. Walk me through how that started and how that got to your first business, the fitness app.
Everyone always talks about kind of Honor and like that being the golden child. I call Honor the golden child. But what they don't realize is I built a 10-year business. I had a decade of being an entrepreneur before Honor. And being an influencer and being able to convert your followers is a business in itself. And my business wouldn't be able to be what it is today without the influencer economy. You know, when we talk about partnerships and when we talk about working with influencers and collaborators, last year alone, they generated nearly 55 million in sales.
Within your business?
Within my business.
Which is crazy.
Which is crazy because these are, quote unquote, just girls posting workout videos. Well, they're not just girls posting workout videos. Trying to convert someone and convince them to buy into you is the hardest trait that anyone could learn to do, and not many people can do it. So when I started posting workout videos, no one was making money at the time. We're talking about 15 years ago.
Right.
You didn't post to make cash. I was waitressing at the time, 30 hours. I was working at this little Italian diner situation, little family owned place, which I love. And I was a university student. I was studying to become a lawyer. So I started posting workout videos to actually gain the attention of my ex, because he cheated on me at the time. So I was like, it must be me. I must be the ugly duckling. So I'm going to make myself super pretty, super hot. So he gets really, really jealous. And I'm going to post it. Don't ask questions.
My lips are pursed.
So weird.
We've all been there, though. Let's just be honest.
We've all been there. So I was posting workout videos because I thought I looked cute. I was like, I look good. Like, I'm going to just post
looking
it.
Back in the videos, did you
look
cute?
I did not look good. I was like, my activewear didn't look good. I didn't look good. I was like, oh my God. But I had delusion, which is great. So then I was posting every single day. I kind of became hooked because I was growing a community. Mm-hmm. So I didn't stop waitressing until I had 300,000 followers. And I still finished university because I was like, again, this is a very immigrant mentality. I kept thinking, if you don't have a safety net, you're going to be like left with nothing. Mm. So get your qualification because you never know. You never know. It wasn't until I had about 600,000 followers that I made my first brand deal and I made my first paycheck, really give or take. Then I started realizing that people had such a demand for my workouts. So I took my university laptop and I made my first PDF, and I was finding these little GIFs online because I didn't have a camera, like a proper camera to do the proper imagery. And so I made it all pretty. And my co-founder at the time, who was my fiance, very messy story, built the website. And he built the website. I built the PDF. I had my personal training qualification. And we went live. And I said, do you know what? If one person buys, I'm going to be so proud of us.
How were you selling it at that time?
Just on Instagram.
Right.
I just had Instagram.
Like, you can buy my PDF for how much?
I think it was $25 time.
Yeah.
And we put it live. It was a countdown. And then £7,000, £8,000 in 10 minutes, £9,000. I was like, oh my God, I'm rich. I was like, oh my God. But I didn't stop. I still didn't stop. I still was like, I need a stable income. I need a stable income. And I ring my mum and I go, mum, like, I cannot believe it. I've made £9,000 in 1 hour. I don't know what to do. She goes, Chrissy, keep your feet on the ground. This is just the start.
Wow.
And if it wasn't for my mum saying that to me at that time, I don't know what I would have done.
Fair.
You know? Fair. So I would have maybe got too excited or maybe stopped and thought 9,000 was enough. because 9,000 is life-changing money for a lot of people, you know?
Totally. So you have this, like, it turns out to be, you know, you make a lot more than 9,000, yes, right? You get into this period where you're making tens of thousands a month and you decide to actually transition and start an app. So that's almost like the second phase of this first business of mm-hmm. yours. What did you learn and what were the early mistakes that you made? Because as a first-time founder, we all make them, and you were so young at that point. And I'm interested to understand, like, what happened in this kind of initial entrepreneurial venture that informed and ultimately went on for you to be so successful with Honor?
I just want to remind women, if they're listening to this, that your frontal lobe doesn't develop till you're 27.
It's a good okay? reminder for just the dumb shit you're about to tell us.
Just a good reminder, all right? I'm not trying to prime myself, but just let that be a reminder in case you want to be like a multi-millionaire founder at the age of 22. Okay, because you're not going to know what to do with it unless you've got an army of people around you who are going to advise you financially when you're going to pay loads of taxes anyway. You're not going to know what to do with that money and you're not going to know where to invest it properly. Mm-hmm. So when I signed the contract to build an app, I didn't even sign a contract. So the contract was so vague, and in the contract, it said, basically, you own the content, but you don't own the infrastructure, you don't own the coding, and you don't own the database. And that contract came 5 months after the app had launched.
Right.
Rule number one, never start anything without your name on the dotted lines. So I made that first mistake at 22. Mm. And then the app did exceptionally well. We had like 20,000 subscribers a month. It was generating millions of dollars at the time. And it was just me on the app.
I was going to say, and are you still in partnership with that no. fiance at this point?
Oh, I'm still, he's still my co-founder.
Even today?
Even till this day.
Even today. But at that point, like, you two were doing this together.
We were doing it together, and then we had a sub party.
Got it.
Who had the infrastructure of an app.
Got it.
So we incubated it.
But you're learning a lot and you're making mistakes along the way.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, you are cultivating an incredible audience and an incredible community. Mm-hmm. But when did you decide to actually turn that into something else? Because you were doing really well. And so I'm interested what it was within you that decided, do you know what? That's not enough. Because by any stretch of the imagination, you're in your early 20s, you're making a ton of money.
I was making so much money from other brands.
So why did you decide, actually, I need something else now?
Well, it was their brand. It wasn't mine. I would look at my commission at the end of how much money I would make other brands. And at the time, I think I had like six streams of revenue. So YouTube was paying me, mm-hmm. my app, which was very messy at the start. And then it was officially ours, which was a relief, but it was also, we had legal fees and lawyers and problems. And we lost so many people because we had to convert the app to a new server.
Right.
So then the app was down for like a month. So imagine people are paying for nothing.
And so you ended up losing like 10,000 subscribers. 10,000
subscribers
nuts.
Gone.
Yeah. And you're dying.
Boom. And I'm dying and I'm like stressed and my hair's falling out and I'm like, what have I done?
How did you find your footing when everything's falling apart? What does that even look like for you? And what do you turn to? What do you do?
I feel like I have a cycle where I have a cycle of a panic. Mm. And then I have a moment of acceptance. I give myself about 24 hours to have a shit show. And then I'm like, okay, this is where we're at. This is a situation. You've dealt with worse. And then it's, how do we solve it?
And because for you, you've always dealt with worse.
Or this is nothing. Like, I can deal with anything now. The calls I've had in the middle of the night and the calls I've had on vacation when I'm with my family trying to like calm down, I'm like, okay, give it to me now. Because I've got this bulletproof vest that nothing is a big problem anymore.
And your childhood.
And my childhood, I mean, my childhood was a shit show. It was awful. Like, I love my mom and dad. And I find it tough because I know they'll be listening, mm-hmm. you know, and I never want to disrespect them because the things that they had to give up and the things that they had to do. Imagine moving your children, your whole family, your culture at the age of 30 in the back of a lorry. Can you imagine doing that now with your kids?
You go cold.
No way. So for that, I am so beyond grateful. And I never want them to ever worry financially ever again. And they never have to, right? That's my duty to them as a daughter. But do I think that my dad being physically abusing was right? No. Do I think that what my mom had to endure and like half of my family being in prison, do I think that that was normal? No, but it was normal for me. You know, to me, there is no option but to win. There is no other option but to survive. So most of the time, I'm just like, tell me the problem today and I'll figure out the solution for you.
First of all, I'm so grateful that you would even share that story, because I think for so many people that are listening who grew up in a similar situation with so much fear and so much trauma, the idea that you've been able to take that and not just the physical trauma and the emotional trauma, but even the idea of what was meant for you as a woman and turn that completely on its head, it's mesmerizing. And I think that when I think about Honor and your brand, not just the name, by the way, which is so beautiful, but you have managed to weave in this kind of undescribable way of seeing and representing and thinking about women in every single thing mm-hmm. that you do. And to me, that would probably never happen if you hadn't been raised in the way that you were.
No way.
And so I think all credit to you for turning something that was seemingly so restrictive in your early life into your entire blueprint and the entire reason that you're able to be so successful now. Stop what you're doing for a second and imagine the home of your dreams. What do you notice? Is it a reflection of who you are and where you're going, or a mixed bag from who you used to be? Does walking into the living room bring you joy, or does it remind you of yet another thing on your to-do list? If you've been waiting to invest in the space where most of your life really happens, this is officially your sign. Sixpenny makes furniture worthy of the life you're creating. Each piece made to order, by hand, using natural or recycled fabrics that can be changed and cleaned as your life evolves. Architectural Digest has literally said their best-selling Neva collection is so comfy, it doesn't feel real. Visit sixpenny.com/aspire for 10% off your first purchase, or order yourself a set of free fabric swatches from their catalog of all natural and recycled materials. That's sixpenny.com/aspire. I want to go back to the business partnership, because I think it's something that people do get really scrambled about, like even beginning to think about why they would need a business partnership, to the idea of sharing something with a partner. Mm. Will you just talk a little bit about your experience of business partnerships? Because seemingly when you're the influencer, you're the talent, you're making all the money, it's your ideas. What made you go out and take a business partner? And by the way, I will tell you, I'm 100% on board, because I think partnerships are the amazing.
Yeah.
And being able to come together with people is an incredible thing, but it's still something people get really scrambled in their mind. And I'd love you to talk about it a little bit.
Yeah. I always say to people, your team, whether that's your employees or whether anyone that you work with, if there's a money transaction, it's not your family. It is your team. I hate the term
say
family.
That again, babe.
Family, you accept things that you shouldn't, because they're family. You know, you turn a blind eye because they're family. Team, no. We have a duty to each other. It's a financial transaction. I will care for you to an extent. But if you start slipping and you start making massive excuses, or you're not providing me what I need, and I'm not then paying you, because that's the thing that
that's
we've agreed on, that's a transaction, then you're not going to call me family, are you? So I think that's really important. And that's what I look for in business partners. I'm like, who is going to be my team? Who would I want on my team to win? So when I created Honor, I already knew my business partners for 8 years, because I was working for their business at the time as an influencer. So
got it.
I was part of their athlete roster.
More importantly, they knew you.
They knew I could convert. Exactly. So they knew I could convert. They knew I'd had the platform. So I pitched to them and I said, okay, I have an idea. I want to create an activewear brand that genuinely speaks to women. Because in the market at that time, it was hypersaturated by men and women in the same market. No one was really talking to the woman who lifted or strength trained. It was still very much like, don't lift too much, you'll get muscly. And also, there had never been product that I had genuinely put on and I felt so confident in. And I think that that poetic feeling of something making you feel unstoppable can only come from someone who genuinely is in the industry, understands women, understands the market, understands movement.
And is a woman.
and is a woman. Okay, say it for what it is. Thing is, they were blokes. They were all a bunch of blokes. And I've had my indifferences with them and I've had major, major pain points with them. Fundamentally, I still love them because they believed in my vision. So I sat them down. I said, I'm going to own 50% of this business. I'm going to be the sole majority owner. The rest of you can figure out your stakes between the rest of you. I want to use your infrastructure. I want to use your incubation to incubate this business.
I do think it's really interesting, even, you know, I'm so big on mindset. And I think the way that you set things up is the way that they are sort of ingested by people, right? So you are almost like, I'm going to do this thing with or without you guys, 100%. And you can come on board. Like, do you know what I mean? It's very different to like, hey, I'm pitching this thing that I don't yet have and I don't understand how it's going to work. And could you sort it out for me? It's
don't
like,
don't ever pitch like that. If you pitch like that to me, if I'm investing in your business and you pitch to me like, hi, I have this idea and I'm buying into you.
I'm doing this thing.
I'm buying into you. And if you're already uncertain, what do you want me to believe in? The future you, you know, like I believe in the future thing you're going to build, but I need to believe in you now. So if anyone is pitching to anyone, you've got to make people have FOMO.
And to an extent, you were proven, you were transacting, you were converting, you were able to pinpoint your customer, you knew exactly who your girl was. And there was some proof in the pudding because they'd already seen how successful you could be. One of the things that I honestly didn't even understand about your brand, which I can't believe I missed, you spoke about understanding the female cycle as being one of the biggest major unlocks for the brand and for the conception of the brand. So for those people that aren't familiar, will you just walk me through that? Because there's one thing, a woman owning, designing and creating a brand. There's another thing when you take an only female problem and put it at the very, very center of your brand and create from that viewpoint. And I think that that is one of the biggest reasons that you've been so successful. And I'd love you to talk us through it.
Yeah. I mean, it started first as a lifting brand. So I only had one product. It was a seamless legging for lifters by lifters. And then when I got pregnant, I was like, I don't really want to wear that. It's really tight. It's really uncomfortable. And I don't really necessarily want to lift right now because my belly's getting in the way. I was trying to, but it was difficult. And I had this light bulb moment where I was like, stop trying to put yourself in a box. Because people try so hard to put brands in a box so they can understand it. So they go, if you are a sneaker brand, you must be a running brand. And I'm like, no, you can have a lifestyle shoe. You can, you know, your audience is more complex than that. They don't just want a lifting legging. So then I had this light bulb moment to create a cycle. So we call it the honor cycle. And I'm really big on my O's. O for honor, O for cycle, O for life, whatever. And it starts off with lifting. So at the core of any movement should be strength. Strength is really, really important. And if you think about your menstrual cycle, when you're feeling like you're most strongest and you're most powerful, that's what you should be doing. You should be lifting. Longevity. We are so much more prone to ACL tears because of our hips as women. So that's really important. Then we go on to hybrid. So hybrid is all about high energy. This is where you're feeling your sexiest, you know? And then you go into stretch. This is where things start to slow down. And this is where I needed that stretch product. So that's why I created Soft Motion. Ultra stretchy, so comfortable, PFA free. I was like, perfect.
Perfect.
This is for me this season of my life.
And just to contextualize that Soft Motion piece, I mean, this is like the heartbeat of your brand. This is your killer, winner, core product that you literally cannot find anywhere because it's just always sold out and it is just the most amazing thing that you have.
And for the price point, because I think price is really important.
Oh, you do? I love pricing.
I love pricing.
It's my favorite thing to do, babe. I love pricing.
Do you check every price?
Are you crazy? I set every price.
Yeah,
every price.
Same!
I'm obsessed with pricing.
Same!
Yeah, because it's the game changer. People just like forget about pricing.
So I'm like, I'm not charging people $100 for a pair of leggings.
Absolutely not, but I engineer into pricing. I'm like, the price is first and then I'm thinking about
then
the rest
of it. Then you go back.
Damn
right. And then finally, we go into living. And living is really important because it's your rest and recovery. And so that's the moment where I think in your cycle, you slow down and you really just give yourself a chance. And I don't think that would have ever been curated by a man in a boardroom. or my business partners. And this is where that duality between us as partners, where I go, how is it going with logistics? Are we like, do we have our US distribution ready to go? Do we, which is happening? Do you have another European distribution ready to go? How is the freight cost? What is like, why are we doing everything by air? Let's ship, it's cheaper. Like, you know, that's them. This is me.
Mm-hmm.
This is where I come in. This is where I have to conceptualize, think about every product, every marketing piece, every ambassador that comes in. That's where you need me.
And that's where the partnership and the beauty in the partnership
exactly.
is.
Yeah. Well, now Honor is massive compared to any of our other businesses, Evolve You or any of their businesses. And that's because you had partners that came together, the why and the how, and they built something exceptional.
There's something that you said that kind of killed me. It said, you don't check your bank account first thing in the morning, you check your DMs.
Yeah.
And I always think that's another reason like people would have so much to say about you as a female founder. When you're running a $200 million business, soon to be $300 million business, it's also quite an extraordinary thing to admit and to say. And so what is it that you're actually looking for when you go into your DMs and when you are putting that as such a high priority in the list of things as a founder for you to do? What is it that you're actually searching for?
You can't call yourself a community-based business and you don't put your community first. And that's what I was saying with that. I check my DMs every single day. I go on TikTok and I write Honor Active and I check every single new post that comes in. I have all my alerts on. I don't start the day or end the day without checking. And that to me is because I want my finger on the pulse of my community. Yes, you have to have your finger on the pulse of culture and what's going on in the world, but I can hire people to do that. What I can't hire people to do is be as obsessed as I am with the people that I'm selling to. So to me, if I don't understand what my community feels or their anger or their disappointment or their happiness with our product, no one else will.
What do you think are some of the biggest lessons that you've learned from your community? And also, I'm interested what it's taught you about yourself as a leader and somebody that is running this company.
When you're the face of a business or when you are accessible, there's a high parasocial relationship. So any mistake that you make, any faulty product, it goes straight to you. You know, I get DMs from people sending me pictures of something's gone wrong. And I appreciate that so much. But at the same time, I have a whole entire incredible customer service team that can really help you. But it's that relationship that you build. So it's a double-ended sword. At one end, like, allow me to make mistakes. Fuck, like, let me make mistakes, you know? And at the other side, but they're buying into you. They're using their hard-earned money to buy into your vision. Every purchase is a commitment to your vision. That's the way I see it. You can't fail people on that. But at the same time, human error happens, production fails. There's so many things that I can mess up on that I cannot actually control. And I can't give you a response or an apology when you want it because I need about 2 days to figure out what the hell has gone wrong. So I think people are not as lenient and as I would appreciate that they would be. I used to get very defensive. Now I'm like more chilled about it because I've realized I'm always going to have a problem.
But it's interesting because you have such an unbelievably loyal customer. You've got extremely high retention rates. I'm wondering what's had the biggest impact on that customer loyalty.
I've been open. You won't find a dirty secret. You won't find someone saying something. People have called me a bitch online and a bad boss, probably true. But then they've called me the best boss they've ever had, probably true too. This is what it is. And I'm going to bring you along the journey, high and low. But I think if in this economy, if you want to be someone who sells something, not necessarily a service, but a physical object, you have to be online. You have to share the process.
And I mean, listen, there are, like you say, it's absolutely a double-edged sword. What has that looked like to you as a young woman starting out? You said you had 130 staff. Of course, you're always going to have problems, but not everybody's problems come, especially like when it comes to staff and resourcing issues, are posted about. And for you, that's very, very different.
Mm.
So from a leadership point of view, like, what have you learned? And actually, have you changed your style in terms of level of openness, level of authenticity, the fact that you're sharing everything? Has anything actually cautioned you and gone like, fuck, no, I'm not going to do that anymore?
We'll put it this way, right? It's not normal for you to know everything about me and me to not know a lot about you. And before anyone says, but you should get to know your staff, of course I do. But I don't know what they get up to on the weekend.
Well, you're not following all your staff, surely.
No, of course not. But also it's a level of privacy that they don't want me to follow them to. I shouldn't know that they're getting fucked up on the weekend, you know, but damn, a video of me doing the splits at my own party could go live. And now you know what I did on the weekend.
I know.
You know, you saw the video. But my point being, it's not the norm for people to know this much about their boss. I don't think that's normal, but it's also my job. So I don't know. I didn't know the boundary before.
So where is the boundary? Where's the line for you?
I didn't have a boundary before. When I started with my team of 20, they would be at my house. They would meet my mom. They would, you know, be around my boyfriend and they knew everything. They knew where my underwear drawer was, you know. I didn't know where their underwear drawer was. So, and I thought, again, family is all of our success. If I'm flying business, then I'll upgrade you or I'll buy you an expensive watch because you've been successful with me. Now I'm like, hold on a minute. Because when you fire these people, okay, or when something doesn't go right and they get really disgruntled, they will say things about you that are not necessarily true, or maybe they are true, but inflated. And then you can't defend yourself because it looks like you have something to hide. So now I have a very strong boundary.
Do you think that, you know, you're still able to, like, to do both well? Like, can you be an incredibly authentic and, you know, amazing influencer on one side and be taken seriously as a leader on the other side?
No, you can't. Sorry, you can't. I've literally had investors say the wildest things to me. So I had once a publicist tell me to stop posting bikini pictures because no investor is going to take you seriously. My question to her is, do you have a business that's making 300 million a year? No, you don't. So, you know, like I've had shit say, people say that stuff to me. I've had investors say to me, you know, are you going to continue to share what you share online? I've had investors ask me if I'm going to have children, another child. So I don't think that you can be as free and as like bubbly as you think you can be. And then people take you seriously because perception is everything. So I have had to scale it back a lot, but at the same time, I'm still a firm believer that the right investor and the right partner will not want you to change. It's like a relationship. You don't go into a relationship and then change completely who you are to make them fall in love with you.
And nor do you attract the right partner if you're changing who you are to find them, right?
Yeah.
It's like perhaps they're just not your people.
I like a drink. I like to have a bit of fun. I like at the end of a big work trip to have let loose with my team. I love that, you know?
No doubt.
Something I've noticed lately is that the conversation about Bitcoin has changed. It used to be mostly about whether people were going to buy it. Now more of it is about how Bitcoin fits into a serious financial plan, treated less like a trade and more like a real allocation over time. More investors are thinking about where Bitcoin fits in a broader portfolio, not as a short-term trade, but as long-term exposure to an asset that behaves differently from traditional markets. Cash App makes that kind of Bitcoin strategy more straightforward. You can buy Bitcoin directly in the app, set up reoccurring purchases, or make larger buys when it makes sense for you. And with zero fees and zero spread on automatic purchases like auto invest, roundups, and paid in Bitcoin, more of your money goes towards Bitcoin. For a limited time, new customers can get $10 added to their balance. Just use Bitcoin 10 when you sign up. And don't forget this part, send at least $5 to a friend in the first 2 weeks. Terms apply. Bitcoin services by Block Inc. See the Bitcoin disclosures at cash.app/legal/podcast.
I want to talk to you so much about like how you think about the business today and how you've done things so untraditionally, because on my way home from work last night, it's like going down Sunset, I see this like amazing billboard and I'm like, oh my God. And it was Laurie Harvey in your new campaign, Laurie looking shredded, sick and delicious. I'm touching my stomach now because I'm like, Oh my God, if I could find an
She's
ad
even better in real life.
Like, let me tell you, I've shot with her before. I've seen it. It's all, it doesn't even need retouching. The mm-hmm. whole thing is insane. But I looked at that and I was like, wow, you know, like to have a billboard on Sunset, you must be so proud and so happy. But with that and coming into this territory, there's so much more competition. It's so different from when you were, you know, in the UK. And I understand your audience has always been predominantly US, but it's different now. It's like you're here. And I wonder what, and if you're thinking about what needs to change, because up until Lori, I don't think you've ever had like that type of face in the brand. It's been so much about your community. You don't spend on traditional marketing. And so I wonder what this kind of new phase of the brand looks like and how you're thinking about how you need to shift and change and what the growth trajectory is going to look like.
I actually made the decision to pivot my brand when I made The Cycle, and it moved away from just being social media lifting brand to now becoming more global. And in order for you to scale to becoming a billion-dollar brand, this is the first stages of it. It's very much, this is for me, I'm here to stay. It's a statement. Signing two leases, one in LA and one in New York for stores, that's a 10-year commitment. That is me saying, I am here to stay. Doing something with someone as incredible as Lori Harvey, you know, that is us showing that, hey, we can do something like that. Because it's one thing to put a slap a face on anything, but the execution of it is everything. That is all team effort, and you have to have the right team to do it. So that was also us showing that we can move away from being a social first brand. And that to me is a statement to becoming more global.
Yeah. And I guess the evolution of that isn't just about product and what you stand for. That also has to encompass the decisions that you make around your team. So what does that look like for you?
We've definitely had to elevate who we bring in. And we often ask ourselves now, if a director or a chief hasn't worked for a business that is making 500 million plus, we don't even entertain it.
I'm trying to understand like what that's actually meant for like the realities of the way that you run the business, because you live here now.
Huge. We're actually going through a massive, like we call it a professionalization of the business. So even the way, so granular, how meetings are set. We are not to have a meeting as directors if there's no agenda and someone has to lead it. There is no more, oh, but I assumed you were doing it. There's no assumption in this business. It's clarity. You can never assume that people also know where you're heading. You have to remind them. So we're taking so much bigger steps to ensure that everything has clarity, no assumption, and professionalization. So, okay, so what does that mean? Because they're all big words, right? So what does that actually mean? Their project can't be placed if it doesn't hit our two agendas. What are your two agendas? Scalability and consistency. Those are our two key words for, let's say, 2027. So if nothing allows us to scale or be consistent with our product, our quality, our customer service, everything that we do, we don't even entertain it anymore. So it's a process of elimination. And I think in order for you to get to the next stage, you've got to do less, but do it so much better. I mean, the other day I was looking at how many SKUs we have. 2,200 SKUs of product.
Oh, that's my favorite thing to do. SKU rationalization. Yeah. Bring me in. I want to do it. I just like, no.
Yeah. And I was looking at it and I went, we need to bring that down to 1,500. And the team was like, what? And I was like, yes.
Yes.
You're going to do less. You're going to do better. You're going to go deeper. And you're going to talk about it.
And it's hard. It's hard to kill your darlings in a business. Yeah. It's hard to, you know, from a business that's been so much based on your gut and building this incredible community to suddenly move it into this kind of like, you know, as you say, professionalization, like that type of era is really difficult to do. Mm-hmm. And it's why so many brands actually struggle to get above $250 million. And, you know, I think about you all the time because I'm so rooting for you. I so want you to be the first female who gets to the billion-dollar valuation.
We're going to do it.
In this category. I have no doubt that you'll do it. But I think it's really amazing to think about how you're doing it right now. You know, one of the things that I always talk about is that you can't be a people pleaser and a leader at the same time. And for you to go through this professionalization, you have to evolve so much as a leader. And I read somewhere that you'd said that people pleasing had cost you so much in business. And I think it is something that specifically in, you know, like female entrepreneurialism, we talk about people pleasing so much, but I actually don't think that women have fully grasped how much it stops you from doing, like how much of a plague that actually is. Can you just talk me through a time when you feel like people pleasing has actually held you back or held the business back in some type of way?
Yeah. One time I got told that I don't listen to people's creativity enough. And I was like, ah, oh, damn, it's maybe something I've missed on myself. So I was like, you're right. I apologize. You guys go build a campaign. So I let the team build a campaign. And my title was creative director. So I oversee every single campaign. It was one of the most questionable campaigns we've done. And our community did not connect with it at all. And so I was happy that happened because I was like, right, now let's work more together. I'm not going to just give you free rein, but I'm also not going to be a freak and be so controlling. Let's find a way to work better together because I think that's what you're looking for. And when that unlock happened, our campaigns just became way more better. And I would arguably say my relationship now with my team is so much more transparent, honest, and comfortable than ever before. Because I was being fake, they were being fake, didn't feel real.
Totally.
So you cannot people please. To be a leader, you cannot people please because you're going to damage your brand trying to make everyone else happy that you're not even focusing on your brand.
Yeah. You know, I feel like I had this so much, you know, like early in my career that, you know, I was so bothered that you thought that I was a nice girl, that the way I was treating you was so much more important than the reality of the result of the thing that we're doing.
Okay.
And what I've learned is that when you have great results, everyone's happy. Like everyone's happy. And sometimes what it takes to get there isn't that pleasing. It doesn't suit everybody's agenda. And, you know, to your point earlier, it's like you have these two big goals in your company, consistency and scale. Like that's what you're going after. And anything that doesn't fit with that is an absolute distraction.
Yep.
So you running around and running yourself in circles trying to please everybody actually isn't getting you closer to where you want to be. And I do think that we can really hold ourselves back focusing on the wrong things. And people pleasing is just such a fucking waste of energy.
Because we're online now.
Yeah,
well.
That is a huge part of it because we see ourselves reflected back.
Yeah.
And as you say, sometimes it's hard to hear that stuff about yourself. Sometimes it's hard to hear that you were tough, that everybody didn't have a perfectly enjoyable time working around
you. Yeah, you don't want anyone feeling like that.
No, you don't. But by the same token, sometimes that's just what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like sometimes that's what it is.
Also, what are we telling women by backing down? So what are we telling women by me saying that I have to like be very like timid and this and that. Like there's a difference between being rude and firm. And there's a big difference between being assertive and just being an absolute like bitch, you know, and whatever that word wants to be interpreted by someone. Because you can be both. You can be really assertive and still really kind, you know? You can have both of those things, but fundamentally, what are we telling women by me backing down the minute I got a bad comment about me? So that's it. Like, I'm gonna quit everything because someone didn't like my approach. You can't give up when someone goes, your product isn't as good as I thought. You should go, okay, how can I make the product better for you? Cool, leave that with me. Okay, you think I'm a bitch, why? You tell me, as soon as you're bold enough to say it, you let me know.
I just think about all of these things as never being a signal to stop.
Yeah.
Like I actually think that oftentimes the worst things that have been said about me have been amazing moments for me to go, yeah, like absolutely, like your commentary is right. And still I'm going.
Yeah, I'm still going to go.
I still got to go.
I'm still going.
Like it doesn't mean that it's not valid and it doesn't mean that it's untrue. And sometimes it's really so much more about you going, that's a truth I can live with.
Maybe you lean into it more actually.
Perhaps you're a bitch. Like is it the worst thing in the world? I don't know. We just need a total rebranding of bitch.
Sounds great
feeling,
to me.
I'm feeling more and more comfortable with it the older I get, funnily enough. There was something I read just about the timing when you decided to bring in a CEO.
Yeah.
And that is about you being able to be super self-reflective about what it is that you uniquely bring to the business versus what you need mm-hmm. to get to where you want. So what was that decision like for you?
So my CEO, Zach, it was my mentor at the time, actually. And he walked into business. He was recommended by my first ever employee who still works for me. She is incredible. I love her so much. And she was like, I really want you to meet this person. And I was like, okay, bring them in. In comes this like big dude. And he was like, okay, well, this is a shit show. You've got to do this. You've got to do that. He was really calm. And I worked with him for 2 years as a mentor before I asked him to be my CEO.
Can I ask you, what level was the business when you brought him in?
I brought him in when the business was making 50.
Okay.
About 50, 80, 50, yeah. 80.
So you'd got out, like you were, it was a real business at that point. You were selling a lot, you were global.
Yeah.
And you'd got to $50 million without that person in the role.
And I didn't want to be CEO.
Fair.
I don't think CEO is a sexy role. I think I love being in product.
Can I tell you, I actually love that you say that because sometimes I think the fascination to have that top job is what sends people down the shitter because actually being the CEO is a very, very specific job.
Yeah.
And if you don't want it and you don't understand every facet of the business, then you've got to bring somebody else in who does understand that. It doesn't mean, by the way, that as the owner, as the founder, that you're not making the decisions.
People make that people really confuse that. They still call me CEO.
Yes, because at the end of the day, you can have a CEO and still be the one driving the strategy of the business, making the biggest decisions and having a CEO who is under you taking that direction. Yeah.
And that's what we do, right? And I don't make any decisions without him.
So nice.
And I have so much respect for him because he is the one that fundamentally is grounding us. I needed someone who was really grounded, who was really calm, someone who had done it before, had years of experience before me. And I wanted to be where I knew I was brilliant at product. That's where you need me. And the thing I always ask myself as a business is, where do you need me? And so bringing in a CEO, I needed someone who, to your point, was strategical, was like thinking about the business from a 360 angle, people, really brilliant at people. That's a huge thing that you've got to do.
Because you can't grow unless you get the right people on board.
But at the end of the day, I play three roles. Founder, so at the board, I'm making top line decisions and no decision gets done without me. Creative director, so strategy, brand, product, vision, and talent. And so that's really important. And
a lot of hats, babe.
A lot of hats. So I'm like the jazz hands over here and then I make the big girl decisions over here. But it's funny because it took me a while to understand the roles that I have and how to also be paid for those roles. Because for such a long time, I wasn't obviously being paid.
Because it took you 3 years to pay yourself. Is that right?
Yeah. And I'd be lying if I said I didn't have income from other places. I still was promoting other brands.
And perhaps that stopped you from paying yourself.
Yeah.
Because you were like, I'm all right over here. But you weren't looking at the value that you were bringing to your own.
I didn't look at the value once on what I was bringing to my own brand. But now I'm like, here's my value and let's discuss the price.
Do you regret that time?
No, because I'm glad I kept every single penny in the business and generated it. You know, we're still 100% bootstrapped, very profitable, using our money to generate future goal.
And you still own 50% of the business. I mean, it's kind of extraordinary to think that you've grown the business to this scale without raising a penny of capital while remaining the 50% lead shareholder. And it's no surprise to me that you didn't take any money for the first 3 years. It's like, but you did that for the thing that you own the most of.
Yeah.
So it makes the most sense.
Yeah. And I was like, how much will my shares compile? I'm investing. You're investing in your own horse, right? So I'm like, keep the money in there, self-generate, mm-hmm. right? Because my 50% is going to be worth potentially one day 500, 600, 700 million, right? You never know. My situation is different because I had built my personal brand first so I could do one-off paid collabs or stuff like that.
Yeah.
But for people who don't have a platform, I do think you have to pay yourself slightly. You've got to live.
Listen, 100%. And also you've got to, it's so much more a question of value, right? Mm. Because even if a business is not generating the cash that it can pay the founder, you can accrue the money. It's not about the cash and tipping the actual balance sheet of the business. It's about valuing your services. It's about when you have business partners, them valuing your services and what you're bringing. So it's actually something that you have to think about early in the brand. And again, I think so many female founders make the decision
to sacrifice
themselves. Now, for you, it made sense because you own 50% of the thing, but you really have to think about that and be able to see, like, what is my clear path to, like, what is the outcome?
Yeah, right?
It's like, is there an exit and is there an outcome here? And if not, then I'm just devaluing myself and I'll have no one to blame at the end of it.
Which I did in my first brand with Evolve You.
There you go. So you're learning, you're progressing. So
I learned and I was like, I didn't really pay myself. Yeah.
Anyone running multiple things at once will recognize this. You're mid-meeting, you need to draft a follow-up email, you're trying to remember which document had the information you actually need, and you've got 12 tabs open across three different apps. Sound familiar? Well, it's the reality of modern work, and most of the AI tools that were supposed to help have actually made it worse by asking you to switch to yet another window. Superhuman Go is a different approach to that problem. It's an AI assistant that lives inside your browser, your inbox, and your docs right where you already work. You don't have to switch to it. It's just there on the side of whatever you're already doing, up to speed with what's on your screen. You can ask it to summarize a long thread, draft a message, or pull something that you need without losing your place. The part that lands for me is that it handles the busy work so you can stay with the actual problems that only you can solve. That's the whole point. You can try many features for free and it doesn't retain what you write. Check it out. Find out more at superhuman.com. Something that's changed in healthcare recently is the level of personalization people can now expect. The old model was a one-size-fits-all, a standard prescription, a follow-up in a few months, and really not much in between. Now that's shifted. Weight Loss by Hers is a good example of what that looks like now. If weight management is something you've been thinking about, they offer access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. Everything is 100% online. You connect with a licensed provider who determines if treatment is right for you. And if prescribed, the medication is delivered right to your door. Now, what stands out is the ongoing side. You get a treatment plan personalized to you, unlimited dosage changes as needed, and 24 access to your care team. It's care that adjusts to you as you go, instead of leaving you to figure it out on your own. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/aspire to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/aspire. Forhers.com/aspire. Weight Loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is a registered trademark of Novo Nordisk. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
You obviously moved from the UK, first to LA, and now you're in Miami, but you moved to America. Mm. You did the big old switcheroo a couple of years ago. And I wanted to talk to you about how that transition's actually shaped the way that you think about ambition. Is it different? And can you just talk a little bit about what you see as the differences?
First of all, I always say I'm very grateful for the UK as it welcomed me with open arms when I was a little refugee asylum seeker, you know, but I cannot believe the difference of America to the UK.
Let's talk about it.
The UK does not want entrepreneurs to win. I said what I said and I mean it, and I'm putting both my feet down on it. America wants you to win. America wants entrepreneurs to win, to thrive, to win big money, and they push you. The press push you more. Your peers push you more. The government pushes you more. In the UK, it is like, settle down, come back down. You need to shine light on people employing people. You need to shine light on the fact that Honor is generating so much cash into the economy. And there are even bigger businesses than ours providing so much fuel to your economy. And instead, you're not offering much, if anything, to entrepreneurs. And it's just false dreams after false dreams after false hope. And I mean, I even was invited to number 10 Downing Street and, oh, this is all the things we're going to do for you. No, you're not, because you would have done it by now. So that's why I left.
And when you come here, what sense have you got and what's the reality of doing business here as an English, you know, Albanian English woman?
so much more open. People want to give. I feel like people want to give. I'm a giver. Like, any playbook that you need from me, I'll give it to you, because the universe is abundant. There's so much for everyone, you know? But I never experienced that in the UK. And I don't know if it's because it's less people. I don't know if it's just like poppy syndrome. I don't know what it is, but being in America has made me want to be ballsier.
I've been obsessed with the fact that you've constantly said out loud that you absolutely want to become a billion-dollar brand. And for somebody that's been raised in England, like, even articulating that is a thing, but it's also putting yourself very much out there, right? You're like saying, like, here is my goal. What has motivated you to A, say that out loud, and B, for that to be the goal?
I think it's a point. It's like, I'm not even thinking about cash. It's a statement of, why not Honor? Why other businesses, and why not my business? And so to me, it is an ego thing. 100%, I'd be lying if I said it was just, oh, we're going to become $1 billion, you know? But I think for me, it's a case of, how exciting would it be to only have created female clothes, never have done men's, to have an immigrant, you know, who comes in and goes, we're going to be a $1 billion brand. And why fucking not?
And Chrissy, what is this actually looking like? Like, when you are at the point that you're at now, the growth is crazy. The company is doing brilliant numbers, but you do have this very audacious goal. You know that you need to change and work on the professionalization of the kind of the business. What does it look like for you to get there?
Chiefs. That's next level. I mean, we spoke
building
about
building a C-suite.
It. Yeah, building a C-suite is important, very important. But building a C-suite that is hyper-focused on what they do great at, because sometimes you bring people into something that's bootstrapped and they're like, I want to be the next CEO.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, whoa, we have a CEO.
Yeah,
he's going to be here for
divisional expertise.
There we go, divisional. So CPO, you are a CPO. I want you to be the best CPO I've ever seen in the world. Come in, tear it apart, rebuild it for me. That's what it looks like. So C-suite is a big one we're working on right now. We're really excited about more management skills and courses for our directors. Like, let's educate them better. How do we grow them better? Because I think I have some incredible directors. So I want them to win. I want them to be part of the journey. So how can we further make their skills better? EBITDA. Profit is everything.
Profit
is absolutely everything. If you don't have profit, you've got a hobby. Sorry. Like, that's what it is. Like,
I'm going to find an argument here, babe.
You're not going to find an argument, right? So how do we become more profitable? Look at every single cost. Shipping bags, why are they that cost? Get me option one, get me option two at cheaper options, right? But the number one thing you cannot touch, product. Don't fuck around with product. I always say product and customer service should be the two things you don't mess around with. You put more investment in that. So that's what it looks like. It's auditing, C-suite, bettering people and giving them more skills and growing them and empowering them, and really just like looking at every single cost.
Being 6 years in, how up for this are you?
Oh my God, I'm ready. I'm so excited, you know, like, give it to me. I'm ready for this. I plan to not go anywhere with Honor. I'm here. I want to be part of this journey. I want to be part of this story for as long as I possibly can until I get fired.
Is there anything that you feel underqualified, uncertain, scared about? Anything?
Am I unqualified? Yeah. Of course I am. Like, I'm 31 years old and I'm learning for the first time. So, of course, I need more experience, more time. Am I scared? I think if you weren't scared, you'd be stupid. You've got to be scared and excited. That's when you know you're doing something incredible. And here's the thing, Emma. I unfortunately was introduced to power before my identity when I built Honor with my co-founders. And I had hundreds of employees before I even knew who I was. So that is petrifying. But it's so exciting to learn. And I'm just ready. I feel like I'm on like some sort of high, ready to go. So
I feel like that was the single best answer that I could have hoped for, because the idea that you are in absolute acceptance that you might be underqualified and that you are absolutely scared and you do it anyway. That's it.
That's it.
That's it. That is just like, to me, and if I could take one thing from this conversation and ask every single person that's listening to like rewind and rewind and listen and listen and listen again, it's that, because you just do it anyway. Can I ask you, like, what do you still aspire to?
I aspire to never give up, no matter how many times I get pulled down by people, by situations. I just aspire to keep on going. Because at the end of the day, you have one life. You are a collective of all these atoms and all these feelings. And you cannot give up. You cannot. You are put in this world for a reason and you have to keep on going. And I aspire to never want to give up. That's number one. And I aspire to honestly show anyone listening that if a little immigrant Albanian girl can do it and be sat here with Emma Greed, why can't you? So that's what I aspire to do and hope and have.
Oh, I love it. It's a perfect answer. Right, I'm going to move it to some rapid fire. What is one honor active piece that every woman needs to own right now?
The straight leg pants.
I absolutely concur with that one. What is the one thing that you do every single day, no matter what?
Talk to my son.
Oh.
And kiss my partner.
Oh, they're two good ones.
Sorry, I do.
I love a little kiss. What's one thing that everyone should do, no matter where they are in their fitness journey?
Show up every day. Doesn't matter. Just show up.
Every day?
Oh. I think movement, you have to move every day.
All right.
Doesn't need to go be crazy.
But something every day.
Just something.
Something every day. You do something every day?
I do. Like even a walk. 10-15 minute walk on the treadmill. It goes beyond like physical. I just need to my head. Yeah.
What's the one thing you've stopped apologizing for?
Being assertive and knowing what I want, and I'm going to do it.
100%. Is there a book that changed your life?
Your book. Oh! Aspire with Emma Greed. No, I love your book.
Did you read it?
Yes, I love your book.
I love you.
Everyone should have your book. It's also aesthetic, so it looks nice.
We knew that that would need to be the case as well. It's got to look cute.
Aspire with Emma Greed. Get it on. Is it on Amazon?
Yes, but start with yourself. You can do it again. Just say it.
Yes, start with yourself. By Emma Greed. Get it on Amazon.
That's it. We'll just take it as like the perfect voiceover. Exactly. You are amazing, darling. Thank you so much.
If you're loving this podcast, be sure to click follow on your favorite listening platform. While you're there, give us a review and a 5-star rating and share an episode you loved with a friend. We'll be so grateful. Aspire with Emma Greed is presented by Audacy. I'm your host, Emma Greed. Our executive producers are Ashley McShann, Derek Brown, and me. Executive producers from Audacy are Asha Saluja and Leah Rees-Dennis. Producer, KK Sublime. Stephen Key is our senior producer. Sound design and engineering by Bill Schultz. Angela Peluso is our booker. Original music by Charles Black. Video production by Phil Sweetek and Carlos Delgado. Social media by Olivia Homan, Catherine Bale. Special thanks to Brittany Smith, Sydney Ford, my teams at The Lead Company and WME. Josephina Francis, Hilary Schaff, Eric Donnelly, Kate Hutchinson-Rose, Tim Meikle, Evan Cox, Kurt Courtney, Andrew Steele, Sean Cherry, and Lauren Vieira. If you have questions for me, you can DM me at Aspire with Emma Greed. Greed is spelled G-R-E-D-E. That's Aspire, A-S-P-I-R-E, with Emma Greed. Or you can submit a question to me on my website, emmagreed.me.